This is the Day Zero update for February 12th, 2017. I'm Blue Book Alpha.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Dan Rip Victoria.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And we have a packed house today, which is good because we have a few very interesting topics to talk about today. So it'll be good to get some different points of view on some of these things. Yeah, before we get into the topics at hand there, we usually talk about what we're doing. And I want to start us off a little bit by announcing a project that I've been working on is finally out. This is called UAC Dragon Sector. It is a map pack for Doom 2. It's based on the Risen 3D source port. It's pretty damn awesome, if I do say so myself.
That sounds great.
Yeah. The link's there in the show notes if you want to go check it out. Download links, all that good stuff is there. I didn't have anything to do with the maps. That was all my friends doing, but I was responsible for some of the scripting and the audio engineering and all that good stuff. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun, and these maps will probably scare the crap out of you. So
it's a football field?
Yeah, there's a football field in one of the maps.
Huh.
It will make sense in context. Yeah, check those out. It's about a 120 meg download. Some of the maps will probably really, really stress a graphics card because there's a lot of crap going on. So, yeah. So give that
So basically,
go.
I'm out.
Yeah, no, I think you can manage it.
Okay.
Yeah. Just need something decent in the last few years, and you're okay. If you got like onboard video, probably not a good idea. Yeah, so
I'm still sitting on that video card that I bought 7 years ago. So
yeah, it should be fine.
Probably on the fringe at least.
Yeah,
should work. I mean, it's doomed.
Yeah, it's Doom 2, but it's running OpenGL, and there's all kinds of high def textures and dynamic lighting and stuff that Doom 2 never had.
Pushing that engine as hard as you can.
At this point, I think it's kind of a different engine now. So, it's doing all kinds of things it was never meant to, like slopes and all that good stuff. So yeah, give those a look. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Well, hopefully get some feedback and get the word out.
I could play me some Doom.
Yeah. You just need a copy of the Doom 2 WAD, but I'm pretty sure everybody here has like four of those floating around somewhere.
Yeah. Somewhere.
Yeah. So beyond that, I've also been playing Double Dragon 4. Got the review in. Should be posted later today, maybe tomorrow. See how things go.
What did you think about that? Because I love Double Dragon. I still love beat 'em ups. But I saw a couple of videos, and it seems like the stages are about 2 minutes long.
And how is this different from how they were before?
Well, I feel like at least before there was you could have like a stage that was 2 minutes long, but like there were a lot of scrolling stages that moved things forward. Hmm. It doesn't look like that's the case here. Like you might move forward half a screen and then move up like one screen and then that's it. Is that what it's like? Does it feel different than somehow the length of some of the stages and then double? I think because it's based after Double Dragon 2.
Yeah.
Does it feel different than some of the other stage links in the other Double Dragons?
No, not really. They seem pretty much about the same. And it's like there are a lot more of them. Again, I'll tell you that much. So maybe the fact that there's not that much scrolling is kind of offset by the fact that there's more of them.
They might have traded a little bit of level length for sheer quantity of levels.
Yeah.
One thing I saw in there that I'm not sure if they were I'm not sure if it was some kind of commentary or not, but you now have a way to defend against enemies jump kicking you, which used to be like the kiss of death in the older games.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And it's to throw out a punch.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they were making a reference to Street Fighter V there or not, because that was a major complaint, especially with Season 1. But given the fact that it didn't really work like that in any past Double Dragon game, I had to kind of wonder.
Yeah. But
the anti-air jab.
Yeah. I'm okay with that, though, because it feels like, if they had actually made a Double Dragon 4 back in 1989... this is something that probably would have seen its way in.
I'm not sure, but I'm glad it's there.
Yeah.
Because they needed to give you some way to defend against them. Yeah. I just thought it was funny that that was how.
Just straight up anti-air jab. Yeah. And once you
figure that out. One other question then. Do you still have, and also I know it had some horrible tearing. Is that any better?
Yeah, it's all right.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are you playing it on?
PS4. Yeah, it seems to be fine. The only thing I can say is, the punch and kick sound, not the contacts, but the actual, like, you know, whiffing sounds kind of are not that great. It's kind of like sandpaper, but whatevs. That's kind of a minor complaint. Other than that, it's a pretty good game. It's very blatant about what it is.
Unapologetic.
Yeah. And the fact that enemies, neither you nor the enemies can block anything, kind of leads to some interesting exploits.
I just love Double Dragon. Yeah. I always have. I always will.
Yeah.
There's, I like the character unlocking.
Yeah, basically finish a level and you get a character.
It was something that they played with in Double Dragon 3 NES, but they didn't really see it through to a logical conclusion.
Yeah.
Now they have.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, is there a misspelling of Billy and Jimmy? Do we got Bimmy and Jimmy back? Because that would be amazing.
No. Somebody actually proofread this.
Sons of bitches.
Yeah. Although you can play it in Japanese if you want to. I don't know why you would, but you could. So, yeah, Double Dragon 4. Check it out. It's a pretty fun game. And other than that, well, just my regular go-to games, Defense Grid and Diablo, so not going to spend much time there. How about you, Brenda? Pass first.
Finally wrapped up the Yakuza 0 review. It's good. You should play it. Other than that, back to NHL 17, my be a GM mode. Fixing the Colorado Avalanche, and we're like 3 games over 500 right now at New Year's, so I must be doing something right. Also playing Double Dragon 4, but not nearly as much as I would have liked. Definitely need to put some more time into that one. And other than that, I'm just about to return to older habits, my usual Heaven's Ward, Street Fighter V, my real go-tos. So that'll be fun.
Yeah.
It's just, there's probably going to be some Ridge Racer 2 in there.
Yeah.
But I really want to get some more videos posted, hopefully this week. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
How about you, Brandon?
Well, Shin Megami Tensei 4, still on the DS.
Nice.
Not really too much to say on that front. Still hard as balls, but still very fun and rewarding to play. I also picked up a copy of Titanfall 2 because everybody had been driving me crazy about the campaign in that one, and it's like, you've got to play it, so I'm going to play it.
How much is that game going for these days?
I got it for $40.
That ain't bad.
But, I mean, I got it at, Sam's, so.
Yeah. It's kind of a shame about that game. It just got just buried by Battlefield 1.
Yeah. That Battlefield 1 isn't a good game. It's an amazing game.
But yeah, but, space out your releases, EA. Jeez. Yeah.
And, depending on, I'm probably going to get For Honor this week.
Yeah.
So, Dan Reb, go ahead and tell us how For Honor was.
Cool. So, speaking of For Honor, I've been playing the beta over the past couple of days. I probably have around, 7 hours logged into it. Mm-hmm. And, it is pretty damn awesome. I'll tell you what, though. It does have a bit of a learning curve. So, it starts off with a tutorial at the start.
Mm-hmm.
And, I believe there were 3 factions you can get into. They're Knights, Samurai, and Vikings,
yep.
Each of them with their own strengths and weaknesses, and they have about I think three or four characters you can use on the onset.
Four.
So
yeah, there's four different. Each one has four different classes that are unique to that particular. But in hindsight, they all kind of operate the same way across the different factions.
Yeah. And then you only have direct access to about half of those, and the rest you have to buy through the currency that you have at the start, as well as what you earn while playing.
Yeah.
The demo itself takes around like 15, 20 minutes, and though it's quick, you quickly forget about everything you learned as soon as you get thrown into your first battle. Because if you're anything like me, where you've played a whole lot of both 2D and 3D beat-em-ups, you're going to be really tempted to go ahead and mash square every chance you get. That's not going to work. You know,
this is not
like
Dynasty Warriors.
No. Not like Dynasty Warriors at all, even though it has a lot of similarities to it.
A lot more like Bushido Blade, actually, from what people have told me.
Yeah, it's a lot like Bushido Blade. It's also a lot like Skyward Sword without any, you know, motion control. So you have to study your opponent as to where they're blocking, and where they're blocking is also where they'll be hitting you. So the way to really play this is you have to really learn your right stick. So if you're tilting your right stick towards the right, you're going to be blocking right, and you're also going to be hitting the left side of your opponent. So if you're not using the right stick at all, you're probably going to die rather easily. And you also have to differentiate your attacks. R1 is going to be your basic weak attack, while R2 is going to be your strong attack. At first, it'll be easy to just go ahead and spam R2, but it'll also use up most of your energy, which is gained by not doing anything or wasted by, you know, using too many strikes. So when you're tired, you're going to be slower, and your attacks aren't going to be as great. At the same time, you also want to be using those R1s, because that's the best way to keep your opponent off guard. And there's also a lot of fighting game style combos that you can use. And that's probably the game within the game, because each character is going to have their own strengths and weaknesses. And that's where you'll be learning a lot of stuff. As for the modes of play in multiplayer, you have Dominion, which just requires you to capture and hold several points. You have... I forgot what the other ones are called, Brandon, but there's one where you're literally fighting one-on-one.
Yeah.
And then there's another one where you're fighting four-on-four. I was playing with a few friends, and there was one guy who literally just got off the tutorial. And like I said earlier, once you finish that and start playing, again, you're going to forget everything you learn. So basically, if you're caught on his team, you're going to die, because everybody is just going to team up on him, and you're left with 2-1-1 assaults, and it's not fun at all once that happens. But yeah, good learning curve, fun game. From what I've experienced, I didn't experience like any really significant slowdown or lag. And then when the servers were down, they did tell us like, you know, 2 hours before, so that really wasn't much of an issue. But yeah, I'm sold. I'm totally buying this game. There's a single-player campaign, so that adds more value to it, and I'm excited. All right.
Yeah, I'm hoping that campaign's going to end up being good, because you know, it sounds like the multiplayer is awesome. I hope the campaign can equal up to it.
Yeah, I mean, when I was deciding like which version of the game to buy, I just went ahead and went with the most basic, mainly because, you know, Ubisoft is notorious for making their games like half off 3 months later. I don't know how long I'd be playing this, because for me the value will be how long my friends are going to be playing it. And while it's good, I don't know if it'll, you know, maybe I don't know if it'll be as long lasting as Overwatch was or currently is. So again, we'll see with that. But I'm also hoping that this is a really strong first release, because again, it's an Ubisoft thing where the first game isn't that great, but it's successful enough for a sequel, and the sequel normally blows the first game out of the water.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But so far, I like what I've played, and hoping for the best with that. I also just finished Final Fantasy XV at the beginning of the week. And it was quite solid. The funny thing about it was the fact that, for the most part, the game is really open-ended. And then once you get towards the ending, that's where it starts to get a little linear. It's all, but I don't know. I still enjoyed it a whole lot more than FF13's linearity, I'll tell you that much. And it does give you an opportunity to get back into the open game after you've finished the main story. So mm-hmm. that was cool. I'm also sort of tempted to just go ahead and platinum it, because I need three more trophies. And the hardest one is the one where you have to kill the level 99 turtle. Mm. So... thing is that that'll take like 2 hours, so I don't know if I want to commit to that, but other than that, it's yeah, that game's done. It's quite solid, so I'm impressed with what they have. And I've also been playing some Fire Emblem Heroes. I didn't get as much time to play it last week as I did this week, and I was playing it in front of my brother. I was drawing my first set of heroes, and I ended up with 3 4 stars, a 5-star, and a 3-star, and he was totally pissed the fuck off. Was, oh, fuck, I got that lucky. I got Roy on my second opening, and I was like, oh, wow, cool, I got Roy. He was like, yeah, fuck you. Get out of my room. Yeah. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Looking forward to For Honor. I see Chris is playing it too.
Yeah, I dipped my toes into that beta, tried out the deathmatch mode, which... is a 4-on-4, and instead of putting each team on sort of opposite of the map, they pair everybody off into sort of 1-on-1s to start, and I died first every single time. I was sort of, oh, that's, so my tactic ended up being die as fast as possible and then see if I can get revived. And that worked for one of the rounds, and the rest we got sweeped. Hmm. It seems like it's really easy if enough of the people aren't good enough to survive that first encounter for it to just wash over everybody else.
Yeah, when you're playing with randoms, they don't really care to revive you, so you probably shouldn't die first.
So the very first round, I died and I hadn't even played. It seemed like it took too long to get me to my screen. It's like, do you want to wait for them to revive you or not? I was like, what? I just come in late or something? I don't know, but it was weird. I can definitely see it being a good game. I think it's just something I'm not going to get into when I still have Overwatch, Titanfall 2, and Rocket League for my multiplayer needs.
Yeah.
I can just easily pull those up anytime and don't need to add another game into that, especially one that requires a lot more time invested to get all the mechanics down and all that. But yeah, it's pretty good. I'll probably play the beta a little bit more. Just to try out some of the other modes.
It's his last day, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it probably ends tonight or tomorrow morning, something like that. Along with that, I tried out Final Fantasy XV. Played the first 2 or 3 hours of running around in the desert, killing dudes. I got to one of the first rest drops and tried out the weird pinball game. Mm-hmm. It was called like Justice Monsters 5 or something like that.
Yeah.
And about halfway through, I wanted to die.
It's like, how do you like die in this game? I couldn't die. I was like, okay.
Yeah, it's like 450,000 points. I was like, okay, I'm done, but I don't want to quit out. I ended up with 870,000 points. So I was like in there about twice as long as I wanted to, and I was just literally just hitting it. Yeah, because it's kind of a pinball game, but mixed with some RPG stuff and pachinko stuff, where basically there are enemies that are on the board. You're just shooting this ball. It sort of slides around in this little half circle. And depending on where you decide to launch it from, you're aiming it in that direction. So you're trying to bounce it around, take out enemies. And it's just so easy. There's not much of a difficulty curve. At the certain point, I was just launching it, taking out enemies, just not trying to heal or do anything, trying to preserve it. And probably took an extra 15, 20 minutes just to do that.
Yeah. Well, if it makes you feel any better, there's only one trophy for it, and that's for trying the game out.
Yeah. So I think when I tried that out in game, it was like 8 or 9 p.m., and by the time I got out of it, it was 5 a.m.
Oh, wow.
So it was like, oh, well, so much for sleeping. And yeah, just going around killing enemies and doing some of that weird stuff, did one quest where it's like, oh, there's this dude who's yelling for help. I go look around this entire circle area where he's at, and it's like, I don't see anybody. There's no... Now he's, like, slumped up against a rock in the shade. You can't barely see him. I had to look it up. It's like, oh. One of the weird things when I played that game, I played for, like, 30 minutes, put it down, and I got a survey from Square Enix, like, hey, tell us what you think. It was all about social media sites and gaming sites that you follow. At the end, it's like, what one question would you ask the developers? I wrote down, why is Cindy such a ridiculously designed female character? Since she's a mechanic, granddaughter of Sid, and she just has the most ridiculous outfit for that. Or she's got like stockings on, high heel boots, Daisy Dukes, bikini top, and all this ridiculous stuff. It's like, she's not fixing any car in that.
Yeah, she's the definition of fan service.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think the answer to that question, if they get back to you, would be, have you seen the budget for this game?
No, the answer will probably be just a picture of Tetsuya Nomura.
Also valid.
Yeah. But so far, it's been pretty good. The battle system's just a little bit weird. It's not as action-y as you might think it is. There's not like as much direct control.
Yeah.
You're kind of at the mercy of the animations, which I'm still getting used to, and the warp strike is so far has been pretty good. Though I kind of wish it was easier to lock on to some of the more far-off warp points so you could sort of rest on them. It seems like a little tougher than I would like, especially when it sort of highlights it on the map or the screen. But so far so good on that. Looking forward to playing some more. It's kind of stupid how you can't really drive the car. I try and get the guy when I have it auto driving to just run into other cars, oncoming cars.
That's what our future is going to look like, boys. In real life.
Well, eventually you can just fly. Well,
somebody hacks them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm trying to buy as much old Final Fantasy music to play on the radio.
Yeah.
Just be going around blaring old Final Fantasy music. As these bros are traveling across the country. The other game
like
I was
if
playing...
If you hit something, does it do like the fucking the theme?
No.
Like,
they just stop. You can't hit anything.
Yeah, well, that sucks. The other driver just stops and your guy stops. It's like, just...
I would love for there to be fanfare if you hit someone. That'd be
we
great.
Mentioned you also have to stop for gas every so often.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
But even like manual mode, like turning left and right onto like side roads is the hardest thing in the world. Like it's that auto controlled.
Yeah.
That's why I ended up just saying, just doing auto. And it's like, okay, here's the quest. Just drive me there. I don't care.
It's funny. I mean, like Chris said, eventually it flies, but the fucked up thing is if you don't land properly, you die game over. So I was like, okay. Like, at first, you can't do any damage to the car, and when you decide to do so, you die. So,
which is crazy from the start, where you can barely drive it, to, like, they just let you have, like, all the control. If you mess up in the slightest way, you just die.
Yeah. Just, I read somewhere where they're doing DLC, and it'll be, you can bring the car anywhere you want, so I might go back to it to see how that ends up.
Yeah. And sort of the other game I was playing this week is the Talos Principle from the Crow Team, the makers of Serious Sam. Mm. And sort of in stark contrast to that, this is a very very good puzzle game, first-person puzzle game, kind of a little bit of The Witness or Portal or something like that, where you have all of these puzzle setups. So far, I am just doing puzzles with jammers and the laser refraction things.
Yeah.
So far I've been really enjoying it, and there's a very religious story to it over the whole thing, where you're kind of this robot that has been brought to life by a mysterious overseer who tells you of how you're not really a chosen one, but you know, one of his disciples. And there's a big tower that he's supposedly in, and it tells you not to climb it, or else you will be disciplined severely, something like that. And it's like, okay, I know some shit's going up there. I've not been able to get into it, so it's all locked up until you start completing puzzles, because as you complete puzzles, you get Tetris pieces from them. And that leads to, if you collect enough, you can unlock the locks, which generally just requires you to place those pieces into a specific little rectangular grid. Just fit them all in. It's pretty good. They've designed the puzzles pretty well to, so far they're not too easy, and I can see how they're going to get really fucking hard.
Yeah.
Sort of the way that The Witness did later in the game. So I'm looking forward to playing more of that, and have another puzzle game to obsess with. The big difference between that and The Witness is there's not really an open world to it. It's more just going to the specific areas, and there's occasionally some weirdness, like I found a bucket of paint that lets you paint like a message, kind of Dark Souls-ish, where it's all set up lines for you, which I've been finding, and they're all QR codes, like actual QR codes. Like I can pull up my phone and scan them, and it's like, oh, that's what that says. But some of them are addressed from, I think, like bots, and others are from actual people, usually on your friends list, I think. So I'm like, oh, this thing's a scam. They're just lying to you. And so, okay. I haven't gotten to that point where I can even do anything about it, but I figured that's where that was going. It's pretty good so far. And playing a little bit more Fallout Shelter. I just downloaded on PC just before we started, so I haven't had a chance to see if that controls any better, but the rest of the game still is that creepy matchmaking simulator where you're just putting people together in the living quarters and hoping they're not family. Which actually, when you do match up people that are family, they'll just stand next to each other. It's like, it's always nice getting together with family. Like, oh, I gotta put another woman in there, so he goes away from his cousin or daughter or mother. They don't make it easy to figure out what the family trees are in the vault anymore. You just put them all together and hope everything goes well. I have enough people now where I had two people out in the vault entrance area to keep a lookout, but then I got a little training area for them to do their thing. So I'm hoping to train them up and get them back up there, because I just put two random people that weren't fitting anywhere else. That's how I'm getting most of my loot, is from the raiders, just killing them. And they drop in these weird suits or occasionally guns, things like that. But yeah, it's more just it's a weird, just busy work game. That probably shouldn't be a busy work game, but it ends up being that anyway. It was on phones. That's why I stopped playing on phones, because it wants you to come back as often as possible. And it's like, no, I'll play you like once a day. If you can't handle that, you're a bad game. That's been pretty much it. How about you, Lee?
I fired WoW back up. My guild kind of fell apart because a bunch of people wanted to be elitist pricks who had no ability or real reason to be elitist pricks. So my guild kind of fell apart. So I went back to a guild that I've been in with some friends of mine from work that I know personally, and they don't really raid or anything like that, but they're really good people, and we're able to get together and do So it used to be in WoW, the only real way to progress was to raid. That was the only way you could get real, really good gear. And one of the things that they really did well in this expansion in Legion is they really addressed and kind of went back to a vanilla style of gameplay, in that they realize that not everybody does everything the same way, and not everybody wants to raid, or not everybody has the ability to. Like, raiding can be really frustrating, getting that many people together on the same page and, you know, making sure that they're not fucking up. So that can be really difficult. And so they introduced dungeons, and they have this thing called Mythic Plus, where basically you get these keystones, and you can determine basically the how difficult the dungeon is. So you can end up with like a +3, and it's a variation of this thing that they used to have called challenge modes, which was something that I had mastered, but it was very, very hard. And so they've introduced those, and you can do that with 5 people and really kind of make it as hard as you want. And so I've been doing that a lot with my wife. She never stopped playing. I kind of got away from it for a while because I was like, screw this. Because I was really hurt by what the guild did and how they kind of screwed everybody over. There were a lot of good people that got kind of screwed over, but that's a different story. So I've been just going back to Legion and really just enjoying kind of like the breadth of content that they have. I mean, it's actually kind of staggering. I can't remember a time since Vanilla WoW that there was this much stuff to do and there were this many alternate ways to do things, but still feel like you're making progression. So I'm really enjoying that. I leveled up a demon hunter and I'm on my way trying to make myself an unkillable tank. So that's a lot of fun. In the in-between times of that, I've been playing a lot of Witcher 3. I've gotten about 60 hours into it. And, you know, one of the things that has just brought me so much joy and is one of the best things is about PC gaming is just the ability to mod stuff. Like Witcher 3, even in its current version, has some really stupid shit in it. and it's not – actually, let me rephrase that. None of it's bad. Like, it's not like there's anything poorly designed or anything else like that. But, like, there, one of the things that I ended up modding a lot of was the UI design. And so I basically kind of, like, took out the map because, you know, you have this tendency, I think, to just follow the map if that's the way that you're going and not really taking a look at how beautiful the world is around you, because the world in The Witcher 3 is stunning. I mean, it's nothing short of stunning. So having I ended up installing this mod that basically puts a point of view system in. So basically it puts a flag out in the distance and it'll say like, you know, 536 meters or something like that. So you have your endpoint of where you want to go, but you're not necessarily looking up in the right-hand corner at your map. So you're missing everything that's kind of going on around you. So that's actually been a really interesting quality of life adjustment for the game. Because it, to me, it makes it a hell of a lot more immersive. Because I am
the forest for the trees aspect.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you know you have that map in front of you, then all you're doing is thinking about, okay, I got to move to this next thing and this next thing, and you're not even looking around at like the. And I don't know how many of you guys have played The Witcher. I think the craziest thing about it is how alive the world looks.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like the foliage and everything else moves, the trees. Like, mm-hmm. And there are so many little touches. Like the way the world is designed specifically, you know, you can start to see like outcroppings of where civilization begins. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, I'm walking around and here's, you know, oh, boom, I ran into a town. You know, like you see kind of like things getting built up towards the town, which mm-hmm. is I really haven't seen in a game like this. And it's, so it's really interesting to see that because – it feels like they spent so much time making sure that it's a real world, and you can just tell. So now, of course, you know, this game is like, I think it takes the equivalent of like 4 years to actually finish. So mm-hmm. I don't know if I'll ever finish it. I did stop to a certain extent from doing a lot of the side quests because while they were all good, I really kind of got invested in the story and wanted to move it forward. So I'm going back and playing that. I'm probably going to put my wife's going camping this upcoming weekend, so I'm probably going to put a hefty chunk of time into it while she's gone. But, yeah, I've been enjoying that, and I've played a little Overwatch, and I have not had very much time with it, but I have put a little bit of time into Dragon Quest VIII. And while the game obviously doesn't look quite as good as it did on PlayStation 2, it is still a fantastic port. It's very faithful. And you know, it has some changes I think that really kind of help the game. You know, in a lot of ways, Dragon Quest VII was really the most divisive of all the Dragon Quest games because it was the epitome of a slow burn. Like, you know, if you were playing the game at least in the previous incarnation, the one before the DS, Dragon Quest VII, it took you about 30 hours to get to All Trades Abbey, which was the place where you would actually change your classes and how they actually operated. So And I think they took some of that kind of design mentality to a certain extent into Dragon Quest VIII. And one of the things that that eight kind of changes is you have the option to speed up your battles, which is really, really big. Like, the battles are neat. They're very well animated. And, of course, a big draw for Dragon Quest for a lot of people is a lot of the enemies are just cool, or they're goofy or whatever. There's a certain whimsical quality to them, even like to where their names of some of these characters are like puns. And so it's very interesting to look at that, but then have them try and take more of a modern approach of like, yeah, battles shouldn't take 5 or 6 minutes. Not when there's always this much grinding. So we're going to try and make it so you can move through them quicker. And that is one of the things that they do, is that they sped up the battles, but you know, the voice acting is still there. The only thing that's not there is the orchestral soundtrack that was in the PS2 release. But it's not that bad if it's wave based, I believe now. And it's not that bad if, you know, I don't think, at least for me, I'm not like one of those people that thinks like quality sound should be coming out of my 3DS, you know? So, to me, that's not a big loss, I guess. I do tend to play with headphones, but even then, you know, or if you don't, the 3DS's sound is really kind of garbage. So I think not having the full orchestral soundtrack's not that big of a deal. The only thing that sucks about it is Japan did get it. And, my understanding from that is it's because the composer from Dragon Quest basically has a super sweet deal where he has to approve every time his orchestra stuff is used. So I guess he didn't do it for this, or maybe Squeenix didn't want to pay him, or whatever the case may be. So it's not there. But if you have your 3DS modded, you can put it back. Yeah. So you know, there are options there. But it's a great game. I recommend it to anyone that loves, you know, older school style RPGs. It's fantastic. It sort of has a serious story, but it doesn't take itself too seriously. And it's so refreshing to be able to play a game like this again, because so many fucking JRPGs are just up their own asses. And there's just like this stupid mentality of, just overly seriousness in the majority of games. Like, everything's bleak and all this stuff. And Dragon Quest is just so not that. And I think especially, you know, with all the shit that I've got going on in my life and everything, it's nice to be able to play something that I feel it respects my time, but is also not, like, depressing. I got enough depressing shit going on right now. I don't need to play a game and go, oh, my God, everything's awful. So it's a great game, very colorful, and I recommend it. Of course, everybody knows I'm a Dragon Quest fan, but I recommend it to anybody looking for a good, just solid, like, old-school JRPG. It's fantastic.
Cool.
Nice.
All right. So
you going to do the review?
Maybe.
Sorry, I don't mean to put you on the spot like that.
No. The thing is, I could probably do the review for it without an issue, because other than those changes that I mentioned, it plays the exact same way. The only other big thing that they changed – during the combat system, you can actually, or not the combat system, but the overworld, you can actually see the enemies. And so they made it so there's not random encounters. You run into who you want to. Same way the Dragon Quest IX worked. Yeah, exactly. No, I can take a look at like my schedule. I don't have any problem writing it. I can talk quite a bit about it. And then the only other thing they added too is they have two extra characters that you can actually play as. In the game. So that was one of the things that they added. It's Red, and I can't remember the other person's name off the top of my head. Of course, I don't have any notes about it. But yeah, I'll talk to you guys offline about writing it, because it's definitely worth looking at. And, you know, Nintendo again, just like they did with 9 and with 5 and 6, and 4 as well, really kind of took the chance to go, like, let's bring these out here. And I almost feel like in a way they did it, because the 3DS's lineup is really kind of sparse at this point. And so having something like that is a real boon for them. And plus, dude, I mean, we've gotten so screwed in America with Dragon Quest in general. And, you know, Pat linked me something a while ago from an interview with some of the management over there, where they were like,
that's done.
Yeah, it's our fault that Dragon Quest is not as popular here. And it's interesting to see them finally realize that, because, you know, for a lot of people, them being – really RPG fans for, I guess, young, not even younger now, I mean, because we're all in our, a bunch of us are in our 30s. But, you know, for a lot of people, stuff like Final Fantasy VII and VI, that was the gateway drug for them as far as RPGs. And, you know, Square released Dragon Quest VII, Dragon Warrior VII here when it was first out. They released that on PlayStation 1 as the PlayStation 2 was already out, and Final Fantasy X came out a week later. Like, and Dragon Quest VII looks like a PlayStation 1 game. So, and they didn't release they didn't release 5 and 6 here either on the Super Nintendo. And their management pretty much just said, yeah, that was our bad. We should have done that, because for a lot of people, their fandom came during that time. So, you know, the fact that they seem to have realized their mistake, I think, is wonderful. But we'll see if you know, we'll see how things go. I think it's
that was
very
one of the most upfront interviews I've heard in a long time, too.
Right? Well, not just that. I think that they're cognizant of the fact that in order for them to really be successful here, you know, they've got to make sure that they're getting the fans back in. Because there's a dedicated group of fans for this, but they're not very big. And I think, at least in America and in Europe. And I think Square has finally realized, oh, you know, it's better to have these people that are guaranteed rather than, you know, hope we get in these folks that, you know, and get something that sells a hojillion copies. They seem to have finally moved past that. So hopefully they stay.
I would love
there.
That to be the new company-wide mentality, wouldn't you?
Hmm. Yeah, well, because especially when you think about something like Bravely Default, which didn't, you know, was so shocking to them that it sold so well. But like for them, I remember their big freak out, like, holy crap, this sold 400,000 copies. And they were like, this is,
and Nintendo,
you know,
pulled down all the money instead of them.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, it's Square still seems like a company that's very much in a strange place, because they Deus Ex they've put on hold now because of I guess it undersold the latest one. But then, you know, they were scared about Final Fantasy, but then you read that Final Fantasy got its budget back in the first day. But I also believe it's also like the lowest selling Final Fantasy in like the last 10 years. So they obviously have given some thought to their numbers and how that stuff relates. But, you know, we'll see if that actually carries on through the rest of the company, especially with Dragon Quest.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why you see Heroes and Builders coming out, as I'm trying to build back up the recognition for that series.
I think that's great. I think for anybody that hasn't played it, Dragon Quest Builders is awesome. It is so, I guess, unexpected. Like, 'cause I'm not interested in Minecraft or anything else like that, but the story of it, the idea of it in general, actually hooked me. It was really cool because they take the ending of Dragon Quest One, and at the end of Dragon Quest One, you have the choice to basically help the Dragon Lord destroy the world, or you can kill him to save the world. And with Dragon Quest Builders takes the idea that the character from the first game chose to stick with the Dragon Lord and destroy the world. So Dragon Quest Builders is hinged on you rebuilding the world, which I think is a really cool idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a Minecraft game for people that don't have the imagination to do well in Minecraft itself.
Yeah. which I don't. And like my kid loves Minecraft, but I can't. I'm not that kind of person. So, but having it, you know, be more – having there be a story there, and so you're building, you know, specific things, I think is a cool way to do it. And it taps into a younger market. I mean, you know, Dragon Quest in and of itself is relatively cartoony. It always has been. So to take something, you know, like the Minecraft concept, which, you know, kids have lost their damn minds over, and applying a Dragon Quest feel to it, I think is a really neat idea.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on from that, because, we're like an hour in, and we haven't actually talked about any of the news stories yet. So, yeah, let's try to motor through some of these. Just a quick note, we were talking about For Honor earlier. That's out this week, so if you were interested in what we were talking about earlier about the game and it sounded interesting to you, you're going to be able to pick it up this week. So,
if you want to kill Nazis, Sniper Elite 4 is out there. Shoot them in the head and watch their faces explode.
Yeah, in slow motion.
Yeah.
So, yep.
Or shoot them in the balls, watch that explode.
Yeah. Yeah, if you haven't played the Sniper Elite games, those are amazing. Just because.
Like Mortal Kombat's
X-rays.
X-ray mode, but in a first-person shooter.
Yeah. So. Is that?
Wow.
Yeah. So getting on to our first news story, we got Activision Blizzard earnings call this week. Activision did pretty well thanks to Blizzard, pretty much. So
yeah, the funny part about that whole thing is Blizzard, like, I don't know if you guys are aware, like, one of the things that they stopped doing is they stopped looking at subscriber numbers, and instead they're more interested in engagement, in the same way that the folks from Xbox Live are. And the most interesting part of the earnings call was they had a record number of users. They call them MAUs, which are monthly active users. For fourth quarter, they had an average of monthly active users of over 41 million people. So that's 41 million people between Hearthstone, Diablo, World of Warcraft, and Overwatch, and Heroes of the Storm playing Blizzard games. And, you know, pretty much every Blizzard game at this point has a monetary hook that people buy into. So, you know, with Hearthstones, it's PAX. With Heroes of the Storm, it's Heroes and those STEM packs and things like that. And, of course, WoW has its monthly subscription fee, as well as, you know, in-game purchases you can make. And, of course, everyone knows about those Hearthstone loot boxes. So their level of engagement, the most interesting thing about these numbers, especially since we're talking about all of these games that they're sort of trying to be like the end-all, be-all of multiplayer, like, we want you to play this game and nothing else. Blizzard is in a really interesting and kind of unique position to where they're running a lot of different types of games to capture a lot of different people. And it's ironic because, as you go, I don't know if we didn't mention it yet, but Activision is laying people off.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you know, Blizzard is raking in the dough. And, you know, they've always operated independently of Activision anyway. But to have them sort of boost that up because Blizzard finally decided, you know, we should really diversify the amount of games that we have, I think is really kind of fascinating, because there's not really a company that I can think of right now that has the style of multiplayer catalog that Blizzard has, because everything is really multiplayer that they do. And they have a game that really kind of scratches the itch for almost everyone. And I never would have imagined, even 5 years ago, Blizzard would have put themselves in this situation and I guess be successful. I know that sounds bad, because Blizzard tends to – they always make good stuff. But they had so many missteps too, with like Diablo and with WoW and all that stuff. Like, I feel like their turnaround really came with Hearthstone, Heroes of the Storm, and then Overwatch being just the juggernaut that it is.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see how they'll position that going forward, because a lot of times people want to see – when you have a successful catalog like that, they want to see it continually be monetized, or they look for people to go like the EA route, which is bring out a new sequel every year. Blizzard's not going to do that. No. I mean, it took them 15 years to do StarCraft II. So that's not the way they're going to go for. So it's going to be interesting to see how they keep those folks engaged, especially if there's not so much of a pay model. They'll probably end up doing expansions for Overwatch. I don't see why they wouldn't. They did it for Heroes of the Storm.
Yeah.
Or not Heroes of the Storm. They've added characters with Heroes of the Storm and maps. But with Hearthstone has expansions. Obviously, WoW does. Diablo has. So they'll probably come up with something.
Yeah.
And they just added the ability to buy loot crates, Overwatch loot crates in WoW, didn't they? It's like the one.
Yeah. So what it is yeah. So what it is, WoW has a thing, and I think actually this is part of the reason that they stopped really kind of listing subscriber numbers, is because WoW now has this thing with gold where you can buy a Blizzard token, and what the token does is it basically the way it was previously is you just got a month of game time, but now if you buy a token from like the auction house, you basically just get $15 in Blizzard bucks. And so if you have those Blizzard bucks, you can use that for anything. So like, I could take my gold that I have in WoW and use that and basically attach it to Blizzard service and use it to buy loot crates in Overwatch. I could buy packs in Hearthstone. I could buy skins in Heroes of the Storm. So it's interesting that they have that in place to where it's like, oh, so you play this one game, you have a bunch of extra gold lying around, why not use that to buy some shit in the other game? And it's like, well, that's almost evil in a way.
It's awesome too.
Like, in one sense, because you're like, that's so cool. Like right now I'm sitting at like a million something gold that I'll probably never use in WoW. But it's like, so you mean I could use this to then sort of get into another game? Like, that's dastardly brilliant, you know?
It makes perfect sense, though.
Yeah, it's like how SOE used to have the universal currency between all of their MMOs.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing is, frankly, I think it helps in Blizzard's case because Blizzard's not really a scummy company. Mm. You know, like, this would be one of those things where I feel really, like, strange about and probably halfway taken advantage of if it came from EA. Just because EA is EA, like, you know, you'll pull something on me eventually. But Blizzard seems to be the type of company that's like, we're going to do this and then we're going to stay here. And this is how we're going to do it for 15 years. Yeah. So all that money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Blizzard models. Audience, yeah. It seems to be working for them. It's like if we take a look at where the Activision's layoffs are coming from, it's, you know, that direct result of that, you know, yearly sequel mentality. Layoffs are coming from Treyarch, Infinity Ward. They Activision divested themselves of Freestyle Games. It's basically just shedding a lot of, I guess they would call it weight, but yeah.
Yeah, and Blizzard doesn't typically, I mean, as far as I know, they don't lay people off. I mean, they are one of those companies, of course, they're also in a unique position, especially with WoW, because WoW gave them so much money. So, I mean, let's not forget, this is the same company that worked on a new MMO for almost 7 years and then gutted it, and then that's what they made Overwatch out of. So, you know, this is a company that seems to know what their strengths are. And they're a company that has no problem gutting something that they think is not working, but that never seems to get held against the employees, which is pretty miraculous in this day and age.
Yeah,
they kind of have it like Valve, where they can just say, okay, you're moving your desk from the WoW office over to the Overwatch office. You're going to work there for a while and do this.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they did. Matter of fact, speaking of that, that's how Overwatch worked. Jeff Kaplan was the lead designer on Vanilla WoW and the Burning Crusade, and then they put him on Titan, which of course ended up being Overwatch. So it's like, yeah, the last director of WoW, Tom Chilton, he's just now moved on to some unannounced game, so he's going to be doing the design for that. So yeah, they seem to they're very big. It looks it seems like for about actually keeping good employees and actually promoting them so that they can make something else cool. So
yeah.
So. And whereas Activision is like, well, they made the game, huh? Yeah. All right, let's fire them.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah, they said they're done with. They're not releasing another Skylanders this year.
No.
Call of Duty's going back to the regular Warfare stuff.
Yeah.
And I forget the other thing. Like,
there's the
Bungie is supposed
Call
to get
Duty,
Destiny.
Warfare.
Yeah.
Regular Warfare.
Well, I read something that like there's a clause in the contract with Bungie that if Destiny 2 is not delivered this year, then apparently they get a shit ton of Activision will get a shit ton of Bungie stock. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really interesting. Like basically setting themselves up to take them over if Bungie doesn't deliver.
Yeah,
that's scummy as shit.
Well, that sounds...
I think the official stance from Bungie's side is that that's not there. So we
I would not expect them to say that, because if they did come out and say that and say that's what we're doing, there's a very real chance that their stock could take a hit.
Yeah.
So. But I think they're basically in a we're getting this out come hell or high water, which worked real well last time when Destiny first came out.
Yeah, well.
Or they were gutting that game as much as possible just to get it into a good state enough to release it. Where's all the content?
Yeah, examining that would be an interesting show in and of itself. Like Kotaku did a really interesting piece about what happened with them. And Marty O'Donnell, the composer, how he had kind of gotten laid off. And then when you just read about all of the actual changes that they made to the story, and like that's part of the reason why a bunch of the shit Peter Dinklage was saying didn't make any goddamn sense.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, that talk about an interesting set of developments. That one.
Yeah, like how you had to get lore from the cards that you got on Bungie.net instead of in the game.
Mm-hmm. Which is really crazy because Bungie's pretty good at storytelling. Halo, even though it's relatively straightforward, has got some interesting lore. So, whatever.
Yeah,
it seems like from everything we know is that they had a much grander plan for that initial game, then realized... Yeah. Oh shit! We gotta get this out in 9 months. What can we do to get this ready?
Well, they did the same thing with Halo 2, if you guys remember.
Yeah. He's
We took the demo to E3 and then realized a year later we needed to produce this game. We said we've been working on it for 4 years and somebody might find us out.
Mm. Yeah, they didn't actually finish that game until the Master Chief Collection.
Yeah.
When they finally put an ending in there.
Sat around playing Team Slayer. Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, you know your game is great if you're like, well, we don't want to finish anything in the single player because multiplayer is so much goddamn fun.
Yeah. So, all right. So, PSA, if you want to get the first four Yakuza games, Sega has just straight up reprinted them for PS2 and PS3.
Mm-hmm.
Available now.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. Yeah.
Just boom on Amazon. You can buy them right now.
Literally out of nowhere.
Yeah.
That once again, Sega has surprised us.
Yeah. I never would have expected that, especially.
It might seem steep paying $50 for PS2 games new, but when you consider what these were going for previously, it's a bargain.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing that surprises me a little bit about it is that they're reprinting the original with Kiwami right around the corner.
Hmm.
But everything else was completely warranted.
Yeah, well, I figure if you're gonna reprint them, you may as well be complete about it and just get them all there.
True.
Yeah. So.
So yeah, it looks like $50 each for the first two games, $40 for Yakuza 3, and $45 for Yakuza 4.
Hmm. Yeah, no bundle discount, but for about $150, get the whole, for first four games.
Yeah, completely takes a shit on my whole jumping on point discussion in the review.
Yeah, because now they're all here.
Yeah, it's all there. I still would probably recommend waiting for Kiwami as far as the first game goes.
Hmm.
But the big takeaway here is that 2 and 3 are available again.
Hmm.
Because 2 is just a thoroughly outstanding game that should not be missed by anyone.
Hmm.
And 3 is what I had regarded up until recently as the ideal jumping on point. So, I don't know. Now I would say start with Kiwami in a few months and then go to Yakuza 0.
Yeah.
And then just play 2 or 3, whichever you feel most inclined to.
Yeah.
But another thing about this means production slots are still available for PS2 games.
Well, they're just DVDs, so it's not like they're hard to produce.
Yeah, but Sony still has to—they still have to okay it. And I mean, production slots for the PS2 have not been very easy to come by historically.
Hmm.
So it's nice to know that they're out there now.
Yeah, well, I think at this point you can outsource PS2 games just because the production is so, easy.
Yeah.
So that's probably what Sega ended up doing.
Yeah, they probably talked to EA since they probably still make FIFA on PS2.
No, I think they stopped doing that now. Yeah, that's been a while. So yeah, moving on, we got another story here from Subset Games, the developers of FTL, a fun little strategy game, if you've ever played it on the PC.
Yep.
They're working on a new strategy RPG called Into the Breach. It's going to be kind of a, mecha / kaiju / beat the crap out of each other type game.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks real good from the trailer they've put out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the strategy RPG, basically, and exactly what we said it was.
Yep.
Giant robots fighting giant monsters.
Yeah, I see no problem with this. At all.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, the trailer suggests there's some sort of time travel mechanic to it.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what that is, but otherwise it looks pretty straightforward. Looks really good, though.
Yeah, looks really, really cool. And one that we should definitely keep an eye out for. It's something I'm definitely interested in. All right, so nothing to say there. Okay, Project Cars 2 announced for late 2017 release. We kind of knew that Project Cars 2 was something that was going to happen sooner or later.
Yeah.
But it's official now. Probably PS4, Xbox One, and PC. Whether it'll have Scorpio and, Pro ports as well. I'd imagine it would.
Yeah.
This is the kind of studio that wants to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they say they got VR support for Vive and Oculus right now. And a triple monitor 12K support on PC.
Just
so if you've got the ability to output that stuff, you can do that.
I don't think that's even physically possible.
There's people with tons of money. Not much.
well, it's hard.
$4 than cents.
Even
probably one of the few games that even support that.
Yeah. Well,
as for features, they haven't really announced much other than it has a dynamic weather system.
Yeah.
24-hour day-night cycle, different weather conditions across the seasons. So things can change as you're racing. Added different track surfaces, so you're going to have snow tracks now.
Yeah.
They say they're going to have the biggest track list of any game ever, any console racing game ever. No specifics on that?
Yeah, bold claim. I just kind of hope they have a career mode that actually makes some kind of damn sense.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, they say 170 licensed cars, about three times what the original had. They're going to add Rallycross and IndyCar to the roster.
It's just basically putting all of the things.
Yeah.
Should be a very good competitor to Gran Turismo Sport, which will, well, no doubt be out by then as well. So,
yeah.
I wonder if these two games end up going head-to-head.
Maybe.
Yeah, late 2017. That's, you know, pretty much when I expect Gran Turismo Sport to come out. So, yeah, anyways. Okay. Yeah. You know Konami? They used to make games at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they're still trying to make some because they've just announced Bomber Girl for the arcades. And it looks...
It's an anime MOBA.
Weird.
Is this a Konami game, or is this another situation like Super Bomberman R, where they were just given money to let somebody else make it?
I have no idea.
Yeah, it says they announced it at the Japan Amusement Expo.
Because weirdly enough, this does sound like something that a doujin group at Comic Cat would come up with.
Yeah,
it's 4-on-4. A losing match causes your Bomber Girl's clothes to shred, naturally.
Of course, because
Japan. The losing team can take solace in seeing some anime boob.
Yeah.
All right.
Because Japan. This will never make it to the U.S.
No, but this is what they're doing with their old IPs.
Yeah.
I can get the waifu market on this.
Yeah. So. What's this next story about 2K, Chris?
As leagues are getting in on the esports stuff all the time, NBA announced a partnership with Take-Two to do a new NBA 2K esports league. And essentially, instead of having it like Madden, where it's one person per team, they're essentially doing it like every player is a created player in a new league. And teams will be drafting them to their teams and doing all that stuff, which is pretty cool. Doing their 5-on-5 modes. Like I said, looking to have all of the teams represented, but only for this initial season is going to be half the teams in the NBA.
Yeah.
Adam Silver is in on this announcement. And he makes it sound as dumb as possible by referring to teams as like the Eve Mavericks. It's like you're trying to ruin this right from the start.
Yeah.
The
I think he was talking about before, like, imagine the E-Bulls versus the E-Lakers. It's
nope,
like, oh my God.
Don't want to imagine that.
I know that
that's
you're
amazing.
An old person when you say that stuff.
Yeah.
So they play the games on the information superhighway?
Yeah, so they're going to be doing kind of what Overwatch is supposed to be doing with their esports stuff. Where the teams are very much based on the actual NBA teams. So you will have potentially your hometown team that you can root for and sort of follow much in the way that you do like your actual NBA teams, which is a pretty cool way to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, and the fact that they're doing, you know, like the 5-on-5 type matches is probably going to watch a lot better than just, you know, one dude versus another dude.
Yeah. Especially since they have the camera modes for that.
Yeah.
Have it from the side, sort of like the actual TV broadcast is.
Yeah. So. yeah, this one's going to be interesting. Keep an eye on that. Sad news, if you were waiting for South Park The Fractured Butthole, it's been delayed again.
They haven't really given much
possibly
reason
not by
why
much.
Either.
Yeah.
Possibly by not by much or by a whole lot.
Yeah. Fiscal 2018, which means, April to March.
Yeah,
I think it would be in their best interest to get it out in the summer.
Yeah.
There's not much coming out.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to say there's most likely it'll end up in the first portion of that time frame, and no way in hell that it falls off 2017.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if it falls off 2017.
Yeah.
Because go ahead.
They cited reasons for meeting expectations, but you know, I don't even know what kind of expectations you could probably have for this game. The first one was quite solid, sold extremely well. There's no reason why the second one shouldn't at least sell close to the first one.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's been in the works for like almost 2 years now, so it should be pretty far along.
Which means they're overthinking.
Yeah. So, keep an eye on that one.
See.
Yep. Next story, Valve has pulled the plug on the Greenlight service in favor of a program that they're going to be calling Steam Direct. As I understand
this is a direct reaction to just the glut of garbage that's overtaken Greenlight and just...
Forget the lawsuit that we talked about a few months ago.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's hard to believe that that's not part of it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the one with the digital homicide.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is still going.
Yep. Which apparently is still going. And, I don't have high hopes for that particular lawsuit. Yeah. But, anyways.
Still doing that. They're still, you know, Digital Homicide still having that libel suit going through with Jim Sterling.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
and he's actually had to move temporarily to the U.S. because of it.
Mm. Well, I thought
because they don't know how to take an L, just get out with what they can.
I understand how this is going to work. It's going to be more of a certification process, as most developers have to do. You have to fill out paperwork, get validated, and then you will pay a distribution fee, which hasn't been determined what that would be yet.
It's as low as 100 to maybe 5,000, but they're not sure which end of the spectrum they want to go.
Yeah, it depends on how much crap they actually want on their service. Because, if they set it on the high end, then only the really serious people are going to show up on there. If they put it to the low end, well, $100, pretty much anybody can find $100. So,
yeah, it's like them wanting to somehow get this process streamlined enough so they don't have to have anybody actually doing anything on their own end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially since, Greenlight itself had a $100 fee to post. So I'm not sure how that's going to really change much. So I don't know. It seems like instead of trying to fix the problem, they're just sort of punting and hoping the problem fixes itself based on their recommendation or discovery algorithm that hopefully the crap games don't show up. Yeah. Doesn't seem like the greatest way to handle it, but hey, I'm not Valve.
It's good for the people that hated Steam Greenlight, the developers that hated it.
Yeah.
But we don't know if this is going to create a better or worse environment for them in the end.
Yeah.
Well, this is an interesting situation in the fact that it feels like this is, in a way, sort of justifies, in a way, let me make sure that's clear, the type of certification process that Microsoft and all those guys go through, because Steam is the exact opposite of that. Nobody's really vetting any of that shit. And so that's why you see this sort of glut of these kinds of games, whereas, they're at least doing that a little bit on the console side. And I'm all for keeping things open and keeping them free and all that, as far as, like, the type of platform. But it is certainly very interesting to see this come up now because, if you do let anybody put something on here and you let it be cheap enough that they can get it listed, you're going to probably get some shit. Yeah. And, they've – at this point, they got a whole sewer full.
Yeah. And the sewer has backed up.
Right?
Oh, I don't want to hear Sewers backing up references, but yeah, Greenlight has kind of taken the whole concept of anyone can be a game developer way too far.
Mm-hmm.
And corrective measures need to be taken.
Yeah.
Also has a tendency to just attract some really just
deranged
people. Blue or really cuckoo for Cuckoo Puffs, you know what I'm saying?
Yes. I have seen some of these Greenlight trailers that make no goddamn sense. So, yeah.
In a world where anyone can make a game.
Here's that one I remember. Jim Sterling did a quick thing on it, and what he found out is that, so first of all, the thing that was being developed was shit. It was terrible.
Usually is.
It was crap. And so then he looked into the comment section. He noticed this stupid little game had gotten just like hundreds of comments for some reason.
Yeah.
Then he looked through the comment section. He realized it was the guy who was the developer basically having a conversation with himself.
Yeah. It's like, wow. Not sure how this enhances your service, but okay. So, yeah, we'll
see. And at least gets rid of that weird, cheaty crowd of Greenlight where it's like, vote for our game and we'll give you a free game.
Yeah.
Just trying to buy as many votes as they can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I do kind of agree that when you have a system like that for that you have to do all kinds of votes to get up there, when
it invites it.
Well, it invites it, but more along the lines of when you got so much stuff in there, that system just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
There's a point where it just no longer scales properly. So yeah, I think in one respect, Valve is probably a little bit smart in changing how this works, but it remains to be seen whether, you know, it's going to work out the way they hope it will. All right. Oh, I like this next story. Playground Games, the developers behind Forza Horizon right now, have opened up a second studio for another open world project. Could this possibly be Project Gotham 5?
Is it not racing?
Not. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unannounced non-racing project.
Way to ruin Phil's day, man.
Well, no, I was gonna
you
say,
all suck.
Not if it's open world, either.
Well, I mean, I would be okay with an open world Gotham, but, well, whatever. It's not that, so... I was all happy. I missed that little non-racing thing. God damn it.
Way to go, Chris, reading this shit.
Yeah.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Technically, it's the best kind of correct.
Right?
No alternative
facts.
This
is the part in the podcast where Phil's like, so you think you're better than me? You're better than me?
Yeah, they're hoping to open up this studio nearby where the main studio's at, so they're not going to be too long distance.
Yeah.
But they're still in the process of putting it together, so still have a ways to go on that.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what comes out. I mean, if Microsoft's working on maybe new IP, that would be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
You can't rely on Halo and Forza and Gears forever, as much as they might like to. Yeah.
Yeah, potentially it's going to be maybe multiple platforms.
That would be
cool.
Yeah. Considering, I don't know, aren't Playground, like, affiliated with Microsoft Studios?
I thought they were Microsoft.
They might be
property.
Second party.
Yeah.
So they're not necessarily owned, but they've been only working with them.
Hmm. Well, one to follow up on. We've got E3 coming up soon, so hopefully we'll see something. Never know. All right, this next one.
Oh, wow, that is sneaking up.
Yep. It's not not that far away. The year is a 12th of the way done already. So yeah. Next story here. We got /r/ Street Fighter is going to become a default subreddit. I'm guessing this is one of the ones that appears on along the right side when you just hit the Reddit homepage.
Yeah. Here's to cultural relevance. I mean, that's a statement. With everything that's been happening in the series of late, and, you know, tournaments getting bigger and bigger and bigger, it was only a matter of time.
Hmm.
But Still nice when these notable steps happen in the in more of the cultural consciousness, if you will.
Yeah. So, yeah, you won't have far to go now when you hit the Reddit homepage to get your Street Fighter discussions on. We're going to be right there. So, in other fighting game news, we got, after all the donations have been tallied up, Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3, to be more specific, is going to be the 9th game at EVO this year.
Which means it will remain one of the few EVO constants over the years.
Yeah.
I think Street Fighter might be the only other one.
Yeah. It's weird that it had to go a roundabout way to get there, but...
Yeah.
I guess the community spoke, so they wanted Marvel, and they're going to get Marvel. But, you know, given the recent release of the PS4 version and the Xbox One version coming soon, it doesn't really surprise me too much.
It should be noted the PS4 version is what will be used at EVO.
Yeah.
So they pointed that out as well.
Yeah.
I'm all for it. It watches a lot better than Marvel vs. Capcom 2 did, so...
Yeah.
It's... MVC3, between its two incarnations, been around, I think, going on 6 years now, and it's still interesting to watch.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't been, wrung out and dried up yet.
Yeah.
So
it's still it's still an interesting-looking game as well, which I think is something that's really important.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And especially... I think it's sort of, I guess it also remains culturally relevant when you consider how big the Marvel games are, or the Marvel movies are in the world right now. So, it made a lot of sense for them to have something like that come back from Capcom's standpoint, obviously not EVO's. But,
yeah.
I think Yipes did his part too.
Yeah. Probably.
If you go back and look at this point in Marvel vs. Capcom 2's lifespan, we were already down to, five or six characters?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And not too long after
and, like,
that,
the
it was
next
basically
one to drop
three.
Off was going to be Cable.
Yeah. So
that this is still an interesting game to watch, and that it's still relatively open as far as character selection goes. It certainly paid its due and stood the test of time.
Yep, fair. Then our final bit of fighting game news, we finally got the reveal for the next character of Season 2. Her name is Colleen. Yeah.
Little known fact that she existed as far back as the original Street Fighter 3.
Yeah.
Yep, he's a member of Ill's little cult. And she looks like she's straight out of a James Bond movie.
Yeah.
Like 1967.
Yeah. And,
that was some kind of trailer, too.
Yeah. And the other good news is that it wasn't Lupe Fiasco, so that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you missed the last show where we talked about this, I posited that perhaps the next character would be Lupe Fiasco, since it was being released...
Mm-hmm.
Right at the same time as his album was, so yeah.
Shit, I thought he quit recording music. I remember him having a spat with the recording industry for lasers. So
yeah,
that's Duke and Rhyme, though. Goddamn,
he's got his album launch coming out on Tuesday.
Yeah,
and Colleen will be playable at the event.
Yeah,
there will also be some. First to fives, first to tens going on there.
Hmm.
Daigo's there. Justin Wong's there. A few other guys. So
yeah, it'd be pretty cool. But we're also going to get the 2.1 update probably not long after that.
Yep. The long-rumored second Season 2 balancing patch got confirmed at over on Capcom Unity at the end of the Colleen reveal article. It said, "We can confirm additional changes are in the works to bring characters in line with how we envision them. We are anticipating an announcement early in March." So I'm guessing we're going to actually see this patch take effect right around the same time we see the launch of the third Season 2 character. maybe even coinciding with the launch.
Yeah, makes sense.
But Season 2 in its current form was not very well received. I think it kind of fell into that Marvel Super Heroes versus Street Fighter place where everything was balanced because everything was nerfed into the ground. And that, you know, isn't going to be to everyone's tastes.
No.
No.
So there have been many calls to achieve balance through buffs. And I'm guessing that's kind of how we're going to see things trend with this new patch. But
well, you know, speaking as not someone that's just a fighting game player, but somebody that does that plays a lot of MMOs, I think that's actually a good way of doing it because you risk when you buff or when you basically nerf everybody else down to so you can bring up the other people, then you end up overall with a group of people that are more pissed off because the way that they became accustomed to playing gets changed as opposed to just upping that one character and then, you know, trying to make sure that you don't upset the rest of the community. So I think if you have somebody that's overly powerful, the best thing to do is to bring the others up. Or if you have someone that just sucks, bring them up rather than go, oh, well, so-and-so sucks, so let's make everybody else suck too.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what happened with Season 2. I'm not sure if you've had the chance to play any of it, Lee.
No, I...
Well, okay, this is blasphemy. That I just can't wait to hear your reaction to this. Hmm. So that they wanted to kind of get rid of the small selection of invincible wake-ups that were in the game.
Hmm. What?
So there is now some vulnerability on Dragon Punch to where you can sweep it on its opening frames.
I'm not playing this game.
I'm pretty sure that's going to be one of the 2.1 changes that they get rid of that.
Mm. I mean, that's fucking crazy, dude. Like, what's the point of having something as powerful as that? And if the person that you're playing against is stupid enough to walk into a wake-up Dragon Punch, but then they could... Oh, my God, that's terrible.
They're saying that, that they can... they can tech or block like everybody else is what the mentality was.
You know what? If you're going to do that shit, just bring back full-on fucking parries if that's the kind of game that you want to make.
Hmm.
What the fuck?
I think that's kind of what the entire community felt about it. So, yeah, this is I'm really looking forward to reading these change notes.
That's one of those things that strikes me as the guy that got tired of fucking walking into Wake Up Dragon Punch. He's like, well, I'll just change this. Rather than being like, maybe you should get good, douche. Like, God, man. That's like that's like Street Fighter 101. If you know a character can do some crazy shit off of the ground, don't stand right next to him and try to attack after you've knocked him down.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I feel like Walter Solchek in fucking The Big Lebowski. Has anybody else gone crazy? Am I the only one that's sane?
Okay, Lee, I got to send you these patch notes after the show sometime because I want to see your reaction to some of them. But yeah, I'm thinking that we're going to see Ryu back to where he was in Season 1 and maybe even get Air V skills as an apology.
There's no excuse with the fact that the Ryu in general doesn't have very many moves. There's no excuse to really be like, oh no, let's just make him suck. You know, like, all right, you know, you have like three or four core, and I'm saying this as a Ryu player since day one. You have three or four core strengths that Ryu really relies on, and just like Cho does in general. Ryu's Dragon Punch has always been insanely strong. It's never been multi-hit the way Ken's is after after Turbo. And so, like, nerfing that down.
It lands, it knocks down.
Exactly. That's what it does. You know, and they sort of perfected that. I mean, look at what happened with 3. I mean, in 3, they added one move, and it was where he kind of walked two steps and then kicked you in the face. Like, there's not a lot to iterate, you know, on how Ryu works. So, God, what a bunch of idiots.
Yeah. It was an experiment. I think they know now that it was a failed experiment.
Well, it just goes back to that idea of like, yeah, we're gonna, you know, we'll just nerf somebody to make it more even for somebody else. It's really stupid, man.
Yeah, you cannot nerf your way to a balanced game and have it actually turn out good.
Yeah, ask Blizzard with the early days of Diablo 3. That went really well, didn't it?
So hopefully, I don't know. Like I said, I'm really looking forward to. Really looking forward to seeing how these patch notes play out. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Thankfully, with a game like this and the system that they have in place, these are things that they can change readily and easily enough. So, yeah, let's see how they do.
We won't have long to wait.
Nope. Yeah. So our final story of the day, and it goes along with our Facebook discussion of the week, is E3 is opening up 15,000 slots to the public. These are show floor slots only, it looks like. Yeah, that's a thing that just happened.
I can see this going really badly.
This will go badly.
All right, I'm back.
Right. Yeah, they'd have to make major changes to the way the show floor works just to make it not the most boring show ever for these people.
Yeah.
Because it's not set up like a PAX where there's stuff to buy, lots of free loot, all this other entertaining stuff for the most part, unless you go to like the specific areas where like YouTube or Twitch have stuff going on.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to be the person to throw cold water on everybody, but I don't think it's a bad idea. People have been sneaking into E3 for years. I did when I was in Atlanta. And so, I mean, you guys have valid points about how they're going to have to change where the show floor works and stuff, but that's really on E3 to make those changes. If they're going to do something this drastic to allow the public in. I mean, I feel like you don't make those passes available. You don't do that unless you're also going to be selling something in some capacity. Like, there's no reason to allow that many people to come in when they could just stream it or something else like that. And unless there's some sort of monetary gain for them to do so. Like, aren't the tickets like $250 or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so – and see, then that what that also does, I mean, you know, E3 lines are comical. Already, so I think
it's going to be going to make them worse.
Yeah, and it's going to be really interesting to see what happens, simply because, you know, when you look at this kind of thing, and the public, because we do know the public sneaks in. I mean, you hear, you know, games journalists constantly complaining, like, "Man, I waited in line 2 hours just to play this game," and da 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 da. Like,
and 2/3 of the people weren't supposed to be there, and their BO is terrible because they've been sleeping in the convention center.
Exactly. And so it's only going to get worse. And so, you know, I really hope that they have –
well, hopefully the BO isn't.
Well, yeah, right. I just hope that they have a way to make it better, just a better overall convention experience for the people that are going, because this will be one of those things where if it doesn't work well, they'll stop it in a year or two because it doesn't work well. You know,
there is one way I see it working out, and that is if you have the show floor being, you know, the public access area, have it for general admission, the lines, the kiosks and everything, and then suddenly you move the press, the developers, the demo, like the interviews, all of that, maybe back to the hotels. You have the real E3 somewhere else. Mm. And you're not going to get rid of the public. People are going to be sneaking in. Yeah. So maybe just have one show that's, you know, the song and dance for the public and, you know, everything that we have seen of E3. And then move the real movers and shakers somewhere else to where they can actually do their jobs in peace.
Well, I think one of the reasons that you're seeing some of this happen, and I haven't seen very many comments on it, but I've seen a few where game developers are like, yeah, this is cool with us, because, you know, when we remember earlier in the show, we were talking about engagement numbers, you know, being a really big thing for Microsoft and for Blizzard. You know, this allows people to not have the filter essentially that the games media does. On a lot of the things that are coming out. And while I don't think there's anything wrong with you know, how any of the games media, including us, sort of reports on this kind of thing, you have so many gamers that would just rather experience it themselves, because now we're at a point, I think, with games in general where there is simply too much out there, period. And a good way to have the public get exposed to it is by having them walk around. Like, I mean, we're in the age of social media. You know, if you have a bunch of people that are on Twitch or Twitter or something else like that running around the show floor, you know, there's a chance for these other developers that might not get any coverage whatsoever during any sort of E3 press that could end up going like fucking viral because they're like, holy shit, yeah, my game was – this guy walked by and tweeted about it, and next thing I know I've got 30 million eyes looking at this thing. And I think that's part of the reason why you're seeing this, because the public now more than ever is extremely important to making or breaking a lot of this stuff. I think that's a big part of the reason you're seeing this, because I'm sure you will hear the biggest people you're going to hear gripe about this is the press. It's not going to be the game companies, because they're going to fucking be there anyway. And so if they can get direct eyes to the people that they're trying to get this stuff to anyway, then they're going to be happy.
I've seen kind of a bit both ways. Media, some of them are fine with it because of the notion that any of the things that they're going to see is going to be in the meeting rooms and such, or a lot of their coverage is done off-site when they go to the press conferences or just do their own coverage. Sort of, here's the stream, we're going to talk over it, and we're going to do our live blogs, all that sort of stuff. They don't necessarily need to be out on the show floor for that stuff, but the ability to get around is going to be a bit tougher now that instead of just having to contend with the usual E3 crowd, they have this 15,000 extra people.
Yeah.
To the point I've seen people say, you should schedule each day in just one hall. Try to get all your appointments in one hall just to make it easier to get around, that sort of stuff. But I've also seen developers sort of not being happy because of like the more relaxed atmosphere of being able to just talk to people and do their business and all that. And then this is going to put more work on their plates to also have to do business with the public as well as the media and the platform holders and all that stuff. So certainly a lot of plates that have to be spinning at the same time now.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely money too. It's definitely money too. I mean, look at, you know, we know PAX is making dough. So, and everybody, I mean, hell, even now stuff like Evolution, you know, people are like, oh, look at all that money they're making, you know, like they're, that's definitely a part of this. So, and if people want to spend $250 a ticket to go be frustrated and stand in line for 4 hours, you know,
because a lot of these PAX already.
Yeah. I mean, but a lot of the, you know, especially I can say this as being involved in Final Round. I mean, as a lot of this stuff gets bigger and bigger, I mean, the costs associated with running an event are just astronomical, you know, and to the point, like there's so much of like the way these convention places do this stuff in the old manner where it's like, yeah, you know, you can totally rent our space, but you know,
but you get to pay.
Yeah. You got to pay. Oh, you need more power strips. You got to get those from us. And 5 power strips that you guys want to have run along this wall is going to cost you $150. And it's like, are you fuck? I can go to Radio Shack and get 5 of those things for $20. What? Who the fuck are you trying to shake down?
Yeah.
You know? And so this is just one of those things where it at least to me, as someone who has helped plan events and things like this, it kind of makes me think about the logistics that all of this stuff has, you know, in the first place, and people just being like, where can we make money off of it? Because the convention center is probably gouging us anyway.
It's true.
Yeah. And then there's the question of whether they actually scale back on the amount of media outlets that they let into E3 for this year. I don't know if they've
That would be a dick move.
Yeah, they did that whole cleansing session when they went to Santa Monica.
Hmm.
They cut a bunch of outlets out and kept the ones that were approved by the publishers, essentially.
Hmm.
And now it's a lot of YouTubers and Twitch people that are now approved by the publishers so they can have the non-critical evangelicals that'll just tell you all the positives about the games and do all that stuff.
Well, I think that's a shame, too, because, you know, not to to sort of bring some more of the real world stuff that we're dealing with. But, you know, my son is obviously on YouTube a lot, as are a ton of kids his age. And it's always fascinating to me. Like, one of the things that I've been really trying to impress on him is that, you know, all these people that are sitting here putting out this sort of positive spin for what you're looking at. So, you know, if you see anything remotely that says sponsor, that means they're being paid to be positive, you know, like, you're not actually getting a clear picture here of what it is that you're looking at, because this person is being paid to shill it to you. And yep, he hasn't been exposed to that. Like, it's not his fault, you know, but like when you have to start breaking that stuff down, and especially in this day and age, you know, where you have less and less media outlets in general, whether you're talking about the gaming public or even just newspapers, where, you know, we have a set of people in the public now that, because of social media, can get the kind of things that they want to get without ever being exposed to anything else. And, you know, let's not forget, this is the games industry where people got death threats for 7.5s, you know, giving games 7.5s. I mean, it's just one of those things like, oh, well, you have this opinion? Fuck you. And so I think that's the other reason why you see all these paid shills get paid so much. I mean, I see it a lot in the WoW community too. It's like where people are like, oh, like there's this one girl who does this thing called Trade Chat for WoWhead. And she does like one of these things, and it's all positive. And, you know, they've given her access to a lot of stuff. I've never seen her call anybody out. And you know, that goes back to the whole problem with the games industry anyway, is that access, you know, are you going to continue to give me access if we say something horrible about you? And so you get into that. And so like these guys are like, well, fuck, why bother dealing with these media outlets when we have these kids that are on Twitch and all this crap, and they'll be happy to say, you know, cool shit about us if we let them into an event, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's the other part of this. Exactly. Or, yeah, we'll give them a couple $100 as opposed to this, you know, tremendous amount of access we would normally provide a media outlet. You know, so I think you're seeing that shift here towards that because of the way that this stuff is going on and because of that social media switch.
Yeah.
Yeah, like when Bethesda announced their whole, we're not sending review copies out to the media early anymore, especially did that around the Skyrim remaster. At the same time as they were saying that everybody's going to play at the same time, they had sent out copies of that game plus a bunch of swag out to like top YouTubers and saw those videos come out, and they're like, oh, Bethesda recognized I was such a huge Elder Scrolls fan, they sent me all this free stuff, and this is awesome, here's my playthrough. And it's like, well, I hope nobody that's following this person is just looking for their unbiased opinion, because they're not going to give that in any way.
Yeah.
Especially since they've
at that point, by definition, they are not unbiased, because they're like, oh, well, we got this for free. Yeah, I'm gonna, you know, and anyone, and that's human nature to a certain extent. If somebody gives you something for free, if you don't have a financial backing in the situation, then the chances are you're going to be a lot less harsh, especially if it's been given to you by the company that makes something that you enjoy. And you know, so that's something else that's really difficult. And I don't – and let's be honest. I mean, there's a lot of scummy people in this industry, not just developers, but people that report on this stuff, you know. I mean, look at all the stuff over the last couple of months with like the CSGO, the gambling, all this crap. You know, and Pat can attest to this. I mean, we've dealt with this in the fighting game community a lot, where people won't actually play real matches because they're like, well, we'd just be better off splitting the money this way, and then we both get paid rather than actually putting on, you know, the show that we came here for. Hmm. And you know, that's why the
Soul Calibur community is blacklisted to this day.
Yeah. Yep.
So. Yeah, I think there was a story just a couple days ago about FIFA Ultimate Team. People were running a site at the same time they were running their YouTube stuff, all featuring this stuff, not saying anything about being at least partial owners of the site.
Yeah,
and they just got heavy fines, like £120,000, £90,000 to the two main guys.
Hmm. Yeah, that doesn't really fly in the EU.
Yeah.
UK now, because Brexit.
Yeah, the stuff they put out as far as like things they're going to do different, I think Jeff Keighley is heading up some of the specific stuff for these peoples, like some panels and interviews and special things like that.
That would be a great first step. I mean, you can say what you want about the Game Awards, but he's done a hell of a lot for
it. And people could say whatever they want about Keeley. That guy's a gamer. He loves this shit. And so, you know, and I think that's the other part of this. Like, we've sat here and sort of been negative about how a lot of these companies operate. But, you know, these other independent groups like us, I mean, it ain't fucking free to put out a website. Nope. It's not free to fucking record a podcast. Like, all of this stuff has a cost, whether it's financial, whether it's through someone's time, whether it's both, you know, so – I remember there was so much shit it's they gave that both. Guy. Yeah, there was so much shit they gave that guy about, you know, like Dorito Gate. Like, look, motherfucker, you have to keep the lights on somehow, you know. And it's not like the guy fucking selling Doritos or Mountain Dew fucking compromises him in the sense of, well, I think this game sucks, you know. Like, oh, well, I got paid in corn chips, so I got to say it's good. Like, fuck off. That's not really how it fucking works. There are people with integrity. Don't be a douche.
Yeah,
you could tell that he didn't really care for being vilified for that in that way, and has since probably softened on it, but still is not.
Well, I don't think he's able to joke about it a little bit. I don't think it was fair. I think to the other side of this coin is the gaming community. I would have been
fucking belligerent about it.
Well, like, the other side of this coin is the gaming community, the people that pick up on this and turn everything into a scandal. Yep. You know, like, there is definitely, I don't care what anybody says, there is definitely a negative slant in gaming that has gotten worse and worse and worse the more connected that we've become. And it's one of those things that kind of worries me, because I sometimes wonder, and especially talking about YouTubers, like, how do you know anybody's being honest anymore?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like, there is just that air of it. And so that kind of
Kane and Lynch killed that.
Exactly. But that lends credence, too, to some of these guys that are part of just part of the gaming community as a whole, that are like, well, you know, fuck all these outlets. And I don't believe anybody, blah, 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 because, you know, somebody has got to have a stake in this. Somebody must be getting paid. So, yeah. You know, it's a bad situation to be in, because what's even more ironic is this: typically, as most industries grow, right, like, you would actually see, you know, journalism and things like that kind of grow with it. But we've watched over the last 10 years, the games industry, or the journalism industry around games has practically disappeared. And I think part of that is because a lot of people can talk however much they want about honesty, but when it comes to something that they're invested in, if they're a fan, they don't want to know that somebody thought that it was bad. They're not willing to pay for that anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you couple that with the way the internet came about and how a lot of these sites didn't have a monetization model. You know, when you looked at how, like, game magazines and everything worked, like, you know, this has been a dramatic shift, and one that I don't think has been good for anyone when it comes to credibility. And there are very few outlets out there that can operate independently without getting some kind of money from the same group of people that they're supposed to be critical of. And it's unfortunate, because I don't know how you can untie those unless you are one of those special cases like Giant Bomb or something like that, where they're making their money, you know, based on personality, as opposed to, you know, what kind of, like, hard hitting coverage they have. Like, people are shitting shit all over Kotaku if they want. I actually feel like Kotaku actually brings a lot of interesting stuff to the fore that we wouldn't see otherwise. I mean, even just recently, like, Jason Schreier has talked about how GameStop employees are basically abused as part of their selling system. Like, that's important aware of.
Yeah.
That's important to be aware of when you are buying products from these types of retailers, you know?
Yeah.
And so I don't understand why anybody would buy from GameStop in the first place, considering, like, Best Buy, Gamers Club, and Amazon, but that's a different story. But, you know, it's important to have people digging into this kind of thing. I think it was actually Schreier as well wrote some really interesting stuff about what happened with Kingdoms of Amalur and how all that shit kind of fell apart, you know? And so I think that stuff is really important. But I think the gaming public in general, too, has shown that they don't necessarily care unless, again, it's something that sort of offends them, which I just find – And maybe that's just more of a social, like, a societal thing rather than just, like, with games. Because we see it in the news as well. Yeah. You know, like, oh, you're not saying something nice about the guy I like. You're fucking biased and we hate your guts.
Yeah.
When you frame it like that, it kind of shows just how pointless reviews are in this day and age.
Well, and I think that's the other part of it, too. Reviews, I don't think, matter as much as, like, an opinion of the overall game as far as how everything applies. Because everything is sort of like who, what, where, when, and why when it comes to reviews. And there are millions of those out there. So, like with us, you can start to focus on more of the niche stuff or have a group of people that have a tremendous amount of experience in the ways that we do to present a different style of perspective, because otherwise reviews are a dime a dozen, right? And most people, I don't think, are reading reviews, especially with the way that social media is now, because they're already totally kind of jacked into the game anyway.
Anyone remotely informed already knows what they are and are not going to like.
Exactly. And
the only reason we still do it is because it's part of our business model. And I think a lot of sites would feel like they were lost, kind of wandering aimlessly, if they didn't have reviews to produce on the regular basis.
Well, and not just that, doing the kind of content like that we were talking about with Kotaku, I mean, that's difficult. You have to have people talk to you, and you have to have someone that is willing or that is good that can write about that kind of thing and can make it compelling. Like, I was actually really disappointed to see Patrick Klepek leave, because he's a fantastic writer and he wrote about a lot of different things that weren't really like, oh, let's talk, you know.
Where's he going now?
He quit Kotaku. I don't know where he is.
He's at Waypoint.
Yeah. He's doing games, right?
Yeah. No, he's at Waypoint, who is head up by Austin Walker, former Giant Bomb editor. And they're sort of focusing on the feature stuff. Interview stuff, that sort of better stuff that they did at Kotaku.
Yeah. And you know, and like I'm sure you guys read the oral history of Final Fantasy VII that Sam Kennedy did for Polygon. I mean, that shit is crazy. You know, and that's, I think also maybe it's just because like of what you talked about. Everybody already is kind of jacked into what they know what they're going to expect. And so the only thing that they're really looking for is confirmation that it's good. So I think the feature portion of it is really important, or just writing about stuff that maybe people don't normally write about. That's gets people eyes, because reviews are a dime a dozen, because now you have them on YouTube, you have them people's blogs and all that shit. So everybody can be a critic, even though a whole bunch of people probably are not qualified to be one.
Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah,
that's reviews now are just, you're right, they take it as, okay, are you confirming that this is as good as I assume it is, or are you a lying piece of shit? That's kind of the way it is, and you see how when there's highly hyped games and you give it like a 7 or an 8, which still says it's good, there's maybe a couple issues, but then people want you beheaded and put your head on a spike as a warning to everybody else.
Yeah, and you know what? It's not even just that. I mean, I remember Jason, again, going back to Jason Schreier, he got fucking death threats because he announced that that he had heard from a confirmed source, but that he wasn't allowed to reveal, that No Man's Sky had been delayed. He got fucking death threats for that.
Yeah.
Why are you delaying my game, bro?
Yeah. And then it came out and people wished it had been delayed quite a long time further.
Delayed permanently.
So. Yeah, it's sort of a thing of reviews should be just a starting point of covering the game, as far as like what you're getting and the way that people are being okay with the way publishers are trying to withhold as much information as possible until after everybody that's pre-ordered has gotten it is not exactly a great way to get off on the right foot, because then you end up in more situations where it's like, oh, well, this game is completely broken, or this, like the Watch Dogs 2, which conveniently wasn't out there ahead of time, like the co-op mode was broken for a few weeks. So anybody that bought it for launch was not able to actually use that for a while. And so, like, if you had not assumed everything would be, you should be able to assume everything's going to work right out of the box.
Oh, yeah. Right. And that's the craziest part about all of this, is that now we live in now more than ever, I think people actually providing this kind of insight is really kind of important, because we have an industry that is so focused on development time and getting a product out the door at, you know, X date, that they ship out shit that's broken and doesn't work and is incomplete. And, you know, so, and we see a lot of these developers now that are going, well, I'm just not going to ship out a review copy. And like, to me, of course, that's insane. That's insanely suspicious, because to me, that's a big red flag. That's like, So what didn't you include? Like, yeah. You're doing something that's not giving everybody what they bought at that time period. Yeah. And so that's the only reason that you're really doing this, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's
sort
it's
of the notion
of
that,
things.
Oh, we want everybody playing at the same time. It's like, you can turn on those servers a few days early for the press to play with each other, mm-hmm. and then they can play with the actual live servers once everybody else gets it to see if it actually holds up. Because I know, like, when Drive Club came out, that game was perfectly fine with the pre-launch servers, and then once everybody else got on, it just took a shit.
It just imploded.
Couldn't handle the load.
Yeah.
We're seeing more and more publications these days post their reviews late to the point where we don't even know what a timely review is anymore because all these developers are releasing games that are nowhere near finished. Yeah. You know, like, I guess the biggest example for me in particular is Street Fighter V. I'm like, hey, this game took this long to have, you know, X amount of features, and I'd be like, hey, Pat, where's the review? Well, it's not finished yet.
It's like, I'm waiting for the game to be reach a state where I can... I'm still waiting for Capcom to come to me with the a reviewable game.
Yeah, and I think the other part that you see in that, too, is as the game industry really wants to switch to this, you know, software as a service model, I think that they feel like, to a certain extent, and not they as in the developers, more this is on management, they feel like, okay, well, we don't have to deliver the whole package at once. We got their $60. They can't get it back, you know. And so now we have them in this thing. And so I think the bad part of that, the short-sighted part of that is that when you have these monetary hooks in these games and you do send them out incomplete, then your overall base of players that you could actually get into the pool is significantly smaller because they look at it and go, look at how bad you screwed this up. And we've seen issues where it has been so bad, it has caused severe problems down to studios closing. Look at what happened with SimCity. You know, they released a broken piece of shit, and, you know, but the reviewers and everybody loved it because they played it in whatever their way was. And then that was so bad it killed
Maxis. Servers that weren't getting clogged by actual load.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, and I'm sympathetic. Like, when you talk about servers, I'm sympathetic to a certain extent with a lot of these developers because it's like that's a fixed cost that they have to pay, and then it may or may not ever be used.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's one of the things that I'm sympathetic with them about too, but I can't be sympathetic about releasing something that's broken. And to take it back to what we talked about at the beginning of the show, like, people could say whatever the hell they want to about Blizzard. Blizzard doesn't release shit. You know, like, you know the game that you get will work out of the box.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, this is coming from...
And I don't buy Blizzard games often, and I know this.
Right. And, like, I'll give you an example. Like, with Legion, I have never had a smooth MMO launch ever, whether it's an expansion or a new game. There's always been server problems. There wasn't one with Legion. Now, granted, they have less players now, but I was shocked at how good it went. And not only that, like, they did it on the technical side. Like, they had phasing servers where once one of the servers... Like, you could be on a server like... I want to say it's Sargeras, which is like the biggest server in WoW. And so if everybody's logging in and trying to get into the same quest helper, they hit tremendous amount of lag. So what they started doing is just making shards and going, okay, once, you know, 50 people try to interact with this, we're going to basically move them over into like this ghost server so that those people can continue, get their quests, and then once they move out of this area, they merge back into the normal server. Mm. And they did that without a hitch.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're... I think that there is a very important component, too, when we look at these types of games that are coming out with what the developers are willing to do as far as from a monetary standpoint about kind of what kind of hit they're willing to take to make sure that their customers are happy from that initial point, because I think that also drives from there whether or not your customers are going to be engaged. And with so many games now having monetary hooks, engagement is more important than just getting that initial $60 or $20 or $30 or whatever the case may be. I think now more than ever, and I think this is something the industry is struggling with, is that gamers need to feel like they're not going to get screwed over if they purchase something. And we've seen this even just over the last couple of years, sort of getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Where gamers almost feel duped. No Man's Sky is a perfect example. And then instead of coming out and telling people, look, we fucked this up, we have some other things that we're working on, they just went radio silent for 3 months.
Yeah. And then there was
that kind
that
of their
weird...
best move, because anything they would have said would have been torn to shreds, death threats and all that. there was no way they were going to get a reasonable response from anything they said, even if it was, hey, we're going to go silent and keep working on this game. Hopefully the things we're working on is exactly what you guys have been telling us.
Well, see to that point, Chris, the way that I would look at it as a consumer is that, okay, so these guys released this game. They promised a whole bunch of stuff. They didn't deliver on it. And then they got everybody's money and they disappeared. If I was someone that didn't own the game, then that would make me not want to buy it. But if I saw something that came out and said, look, there's stuff that we're working on. We're working on a patch. It's going to fix this. Knowing that there is that level of support there might actually change what kind of purchase I would make. But if I see a developer go, yeah, we put this game out in the wild and we know a bunch of shit is broken. Fuck you. I would never buy anything from them. So you are right to the point that they would have been torn to shreds anyway, but you also got to think about what that would look like to the layman who didn't buy the game yet and has heard, you know, these bad things about it. Well, if they hear that the developer's actively trying to fix that stuff, I think that makes a difference. I think that makes a huge difference.
Yeah. Maybe to a degree, but I don't think they're going to say, well, they're going to keep working on this. I'm going to buy it now. They're going to wait anyway and see what that end result comes out.
It would be better to have your consumer wait to make a purchase rather than go, I'll never buy this because they released this and then they didn't talk to anybody after they fucked them over.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Transparency is, you know, a very valuable thing in the gaming industry, and it's something that is sorely lacking for a lot of people.
Yeah, but to a degree,
I mean, I get your point.
Sometimes it's transparency is not necessarily the best thing anyway, because you look at it's like the Skullgirls thing when they had the Indiegogo and it's like, here's how much it costs to make, you know, one of our characters. It was like, fuck you, that's not how much it costs. You're trying to scam us out of money. And it's like,
but
no,
see,
this is how much it costs.
From a group of people
work
that are uninformed, though. Like, if some dipshit that sits at home and is, you know, in his fucking mother's basement and is upset about whatever dev costs are, he doesn't know what it's like to be in the real world any fucking way. Yeah. So he was going to be mad no matter what they said. Yeah. I think there's a lot more reasonable people out there that aren't saying anything. And I think that to a certain extent, we sort of let the rabid groups that are out there, like you said, like for No Man's Sky, that would have torn these guys to shred. I don't think that they are indicative of the general consumer.
No, but they're indicative of the general internet consumer that these companies interact with, that they get on Twitter and Facebook, that are like whenever they announce anything, that they're the first people that react to it and the first reactions they actually see. I think that's potentially something that helps or hurts the direction they want to take the game as they see these people that are being outwardly vocal with them, whether it's in a positive or a negative manner.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily help them either way. To just have this mass of people that just want to say this one thing. This is the silent people that are like, whatever, make cool stuff for us and we'll be happy.
Well, I totally take your point, but I also think like I'll give you a perfect example. When you look on most gaming forums, people hate Assassin's Creed. They don't like it. It's shit. It's derivative, blah, 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 blah. They, each iteration of that game has sold more than the last. Every single one of them. Same thing with Call of Duty. There is a huge – now, of course, we see with them going on futuristic and shit, their sales have gone down. But the narrative for about 6 to 7 years was that Call of Duty was a fucking dude bro game that was a piece of shit, and they couldn't believe that, you know, that anybody would like it, but it sold millions and millions and millions and millions of copies. So there is a group of people out there that is not complaining and is buying this stuff. And they are people that do read – you know, they may read forums, they may read press releases, they may just get general gaming information from their friends. And I think that to take the point of transparency is that if you have a game company that is willing to come out and say, look, we fucked this up, but we're going to fix it, I think the general consumer is a lot more willing to forgive them than, say, like a hardcore game group. I mean, there are people on NeoGAF that are like, if this game's not 60 frames a second, it's fucking unplayable. That's absurd.
Yeah.
That is that's insane by every fucking metric that you can measure it by. Because, and I'll see them pull out shit like, you know, Nintendo games back on the NES were 60 frames a second. What fucking game are you playing? Because almost everyone I ever played had slowdown like a motherfucker. So
are you talking about Mega Man?
I mean, no, just any game. You can fucking play Life Force. Life Force.
No, I was
just
saying
areas.
Like a general reaction to
that exactly. And those people would just be like, well, yep, 60 frames a second. Otherwise, it's unplayable. Like, those people can't be fucking reasoned with in the first place. And I see that, again, going back as a player that plays MMOs. You'll see people that'll come through and they'll chew through content like termites. And they'll be the ones on the forums going, this is so fucking boring. You guys suck. Why can't you do anything? Blah, 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 blah. And that's a percentage of the actual player base. And I do – I think just to the point of transparency, I think a lot more people pay attention without saying something. As far as like what the gaming public is, where they will see that a company is trying to write something. Like Bungie, or not Bungie, 343, I think really went out of their way to try and correct the problems with the Master Chief Collection. But so they get points for that from me, but at the same time, they also don't get points because they fucking put out a broken piece of shit. But it's better that they said something from day one of like, we are trying to fix this. As of, could you imagine if they just went fucking silent for 3.5-4 months and then popped back up and were like, hey guys, what's going on? Mm. We got some patches.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they, yeah their though, studio would get closed.
Yeah.
Yeah, though, even though they eventually probably mostly fixed everything, like now there's no multiplayer audience in that game. Whenever I've tried to go play multiplayer, it just sits there for 5-10 yeah. minutes until maybe it gets a few people enough to start up a match.
And that's also
the problem with them releasing that game in the state that it did.
Exactly.
It drove most of those people away anyway.
Mm. Yeah, nothing so I mean, really, would've... The core is don't release a broken piece of shit, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't release
a broken... It's rare that games can turn that around, like Final Fantasy 14.
Hmm.
They managed to turn that around. Maybe The Division? I don't know. Like how we were talking about earlier about how these companies coming out of their financial calls, changing from our games have sold this much to we've got this many people playing our games. They're supposedly saying it's like 150% increase on that. I was like, there probably weren't that many people playing The Division before.
Mm.
So anybody also, coming back to it is a big increase.
Yeah, and you also see those metrics being touted more now because of how many microtransactions are in there. So it goes beyond like, well, we got them to buy the box. And now it's like, so if they're engaged, their chances of buying more shit is a lot higher, you know. But I think that's the bottom line is don't release stuff that's not finished.
Yeah.
And no one will yell at you.
Don't release stuff that's not finished. And also another good thing would be is know what kind of game you're actually making. Because for SimCity, that was one of the big mistakes they made. They made an online game that didn't need to be.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to give you this small space to work in. Is that cool?
Yeah.
That's not what every other game has been about, right?
You're right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah, that started out as a discussion about E3 and then turned into...
It was one of the better Facebook discussions of the week, as far as I'm concerned.
What's wrong with the gaming media?
It was hardly about E3.
So, yeah, I will just pose then the question, final thoughts to everybody. What do you think of this? We already talked about, but this is going to go on the Facebook group, so if you want to chime in. What do you think of the new open door policy for E3? So, check out the Facebook page. Leave your comments.
Are you going to go?
And are you going to go? That's a good question. Are you going to spend the $250 to get in on that?
Or would you rather spend the money on like Overwatch loot crates? It's really a choice here, guys.
Yeah.
You can have both.
Yeah. Just depends on how you're disposable income.
If you got that money,
you're
going to
have the struggle there, Danrib.
Yeah, it sort of brings to mind to me like the one meme that came out of that Dodgeball movie. That's a bold strategy. Let's see if it pays off.
That's a bold strategy, Con. See if it pays off.
Yeah.
That's kind of what we have to say right now because we don't really know
what the hell is
going to
happen
for this money.
Yeah.
We don't know what the people are getting for their $250 if they go.
Yep.
I still think there's got to be some kind of cordoned off, press-only access area.
Well, there always is.
That's I think more so than usual. Like,
I mean, with the E3 press, that's saying a lot.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised they're not doing it like the first 3 days are press only, and you gotta give that whole weekend to the public.
Yeah, it's just.
And that's like, that, you get a whole week out of it.
Yeah.
Whole week's worth of potentially getting all of the local businesses tons of business, as well as being able to sell your shit on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and make all the money.
Yeah.
And it would just be the most natural progression because it feels really awkward and weird when the party's over Thursday night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
there's your happy medium. Get crack down on people sneaking in during the three days of the press is there. Let the public have the weekend, and you're golden.
Yep.
Yeah. And I have people come in for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in the middle of the week. Now it's like, what the fuck else do we do for the rest of the week?
Yeah.
And then press can leave Friday and Saturday, and you know it's cheaper for them too. So.
Yeah. All right. So with that, I think we got a show.
Yeah.
So, as usual, if you want to subscribe to the show, we're up on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, whatever your favorite podcatcher of choice is, we're there. Check us out. Check out the Facebook group. Check us out at smashpad.com, where we have reviews that are actually substantive. So, hey, those may be worth reading.
Yeah. I like to think they're substantive.
Hopefully one tonight.
Yeah. So, all right. So with that, I'm Filippo D'Anelfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon.
I'm General Victoria.
I'm Chris Elogi.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And we'll see you all next week.